Thanks for downloading this episode of Cork Talk with me, Tim Atkin. A weekly conversation with some of the most famous people in the world of wine.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Nomacork by Vinventions. Driven by a commitment to innovation, the new plant-based Nomacork Green Line offers significant improvements in wine closure performance. Thanks to a rigorous oxygen ingress rate, you can decide which cork is best for your wine, whether it's for young and fresh wines or for those with aging potential.
Virginia Wilcock of Vass Felix is one of the most awarded winemakers in Australia. She's famous for the quality of her Chardonnays and Cabernet Sauvignons, as well as her sense of humour and forthright views. Listen to us chat about what makes Margaret River such a special place to grow grapes, about her dad's hobby vineyard north of Perth, and about how after 29 vintages in Western Australia, she's learned how to let her wines be rather than intervene. Hi, Virginia, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Tim.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. Where are you at the moment?
Sitting in Margaret River on after probably one of the most stunning warm spring days we've had this year so far. It was awesome.
I think I hate you, actually, officially. Today's the clocks have gone back in England.
Yeah, and we're in a pretty isolated, pretty safe little zone here. We've got a lot of freedom going on here in WA. Off to the beach today, pub to see mates. You know, it's a bit wrong.
I doubly hate you now. Really do. Listen, I want to take you back to the beginning of your amazing career. I can't believe how many awards you've won. And your dad had a small vineyard, didn't he, north of Perth with some mates. Was that where you got interested in wine? And what was that wine like? Was it any good?
Oh, look, I mean, Dad said it was pretty good. I was in my early teens, so I wouldn't know a good wine from a bad wine at that particular time in my life. But Dad and his mates, they called themselves the Four Fools, and they didn't know anything about rural life driving tractors, but they taught themselves, and they had a lot of laughs and drank a lot of wine, and it was just freedom for us as kids. I learned what it was like to feel the freedom and the fresh air of the countryside. And I just fell in love with watching plants grow and fruit develop and then looking at what it could become. You know, it was amazing.
Are you a city kid? I mean, you were born in Perth, weren't you?
And then I discovered the country, and I somehow needed to have both of those things in my life, and I found it.
Yeah,
it was so easy.
You're close enough to Perth, but in the country.
Well, close enough to the beach in the country.
No. Yeah. I see.
Yeah, the city wasn't a relevant thing. It was about the beach. The beach, yeah. And the beautiful, you know, countryside. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of the most beautiful places on earth. It really is. Listen, I mean, you went to uni, studied. Before you went back to Western Australia to make wine there, I noticed you made wine overseas in Italy, New Zealand and Albania. I mean, Albania, what was it like making wine in Albania? I've been there. I mean, it must have been pretty challenging.
Oh, man. I have to say we didn't actually end up making wine. I spent a number of weeks trying to track down fruit to get to the winery. And I was literally, you know, I was 25 years old in a country that had only just come out of communism 2 years earlier. It was, nobody understood what money was all about. We were trying to pay people money to buy grapes. They were looking at us sideways going, what are you doing? So they picked the grapes at night before we could actually go and harvest them, because they went, we're better off making something tangible. So they made their own, you know, raki and wine and things like that that they could trade, because they didn't understand what money was. It was literally like going back in time. I thought I didn't know where I was. It was amazing.
It's a weird place, isn't it?
Oh, totally. But I think pretty much straight from uni, I did come to Margaret River. So my international vintages were sort of intermittent with my Margaret River vintages.
Yeah, and you've now done, is it 29 vintages now you've done in Margaret River? I mean, I'm amazed. You look so young.
That's good. You only see me on screen most of the time at a safe distance. Yeah, it's a thing. No, but I think, you know, we live a beautiful lifestyle here on the coast and we live a really healthy life in a, you know, in the wine industry, which is, you know, it's a challenge to stay healthy in this industry. But we manage to do pretty well because of the stunning environment that we live in. Yeah. But, you know, we're active. We're very active.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know you worked for a few other wineries before you went to Vas Felix, this amazing job as chief winemaker in 2006. And this is the first wine that made wine commercially in Margaret River way back in 1972. I mean, when you got started the job, did you think, oh, this is a huge responsibility making wine at Vas Felix, man?
Oh, look, I can't tell you how privileged I felt actually getting the job. I never thought in my wildest dreams I would have a job like that one I have at Vas Felix, you know. For me, it was just about humbly, you know, fermenting grapes into wine and making a drink that made people happy. That was kind of my original plan. And traveled the world and did that in lots of different places. But I guess the more you know, the more you know you don't know, and then the more you realise you want to know, and the more beautiful you want the wines, and the older you get, the snobbier you get, and the more particular you get about what kind of wine you want to drink. So I did become a lot more particular over the years, and a lot of vintages in Margaret River making wine from so many different vineyards, you know, a lot of contract winemaking and for some really small boutique wineries. So I had really good coverage of the Margaret River region, and it was the weirdest interview process because I had a call from a, you know, like a consulting company, employment consulting company, saying, we think you should submit your CV for a job. And I said, oh, what's the job? And they said, we can't tell you. And I'm like, oh, okay. Submit my CV to, and they said, trust me, you want to submit your CV. And I thought, oh, what's the worst thing that can happen? Someone reads my CV, whoopee-doo. So I submitted my CV and I went through a number of telephone interview questionnaires and finally ended up meeting the people who owned the winery. And there sitting in this room was Paul Holmes of Court. And I went, oh, my God, it's Vas Felix. This is incredible. And then all of a sudden, from going, you know, I was happy in the job I was in. I didn't really need another job. I was just, you know, bumbling along. And then I went, oh, my God, I think I want this job. But because I guess I was pretty casual, Paul and I had a really honest conversation about what Vas Felix was and where it could go. And both of us agreed that Vas Felix wasn't reaching the potential it should, given that it had the oldest vines in the region and it had these, you know, stunning fruit resources. So I went, well, you know, I don't think you've reached your potential. I think there's more that Vas Felix could do. And he said, well, I agree. And then I went through another interview, well, another two interviews, and somehow scored the job. It was a big score.
Did you ever meet Dr. Tom Cullity, the guy who founded Vas Felix, this amazing wine-loving cardiologist? And I know he died in, I think, 2008, didn't he? But he sounds like quite a character.
No, he was wonderful. In fact, it's really beautiful. I feel so connected to Vas Felix now. Paul Holmes of Court had only just taken over as the manager, so I feel like the two of us have been on a journey together in evolving Vas Felix. But in the first year I was there, Vas Felix had its 40th birthday. And Paul had actually invited Tom down to lunch. Tom had rarely been to Vas Felix after he sold Vas Felix to David Gregg. And he just sort of, you know, he kept it at a distance and, you know, David didn't necessarily do what Tom dreamt of the place. And he was all a bit like, someone else's now. And he just walked away. But then Paul invited him back and suggested that maybe we'd like to make a wine named after him. So I had lunch with Tom and his wife. And it was so beautiful. He's, you know, just some of the old stories, you know, talking about, you know, I think I'd tried a 1974 Cabernet and I said it was the strangest thing. It smelt like peppy trees. And I don't know if you've, you know, in southwest of Western Australia, we had these very unusual types of eucalypt, but it's like a weeping willow. They've got very droopy leaves and very long and they smell like peppermint gum, not instead of eucalypt, really. So anyway, I said, and he just laughed and said, "That's really funny, because we were trying to, we'd had bought our first big old vat and we couldn't get the lees out, so we snapped a branch of the peppy tree and used that as a broom." And I went, "Oh God, so maybe it was actually peppy tree I could smell." It was, but it was really lovely. But the best was actually at the 40th birthday. The 40th birthday we invited. It was only really for locals. It was all about Margaret River. It wasn't a promotional type thing, but we invited John Gladstone's and Tom Cullity and Tom's first winemaker David Gregg and Clive Otto, the winemaker before me, and all these other winemakers. And anyway, I was standing there talking to John Gladstone's, you know, who's an absolute legend for us here in Margaret River, because
I mean, he was the guy who discovered it, really, in a sense, yeah, wasn't he? Or recommended people plant there.
That's right. He was the agronomist who went, "I think this is going to be an amazing place to grow grapes." So I'm standing there talking to John, who's just the most beautiful gentleman, and in the door walks Tom Cullity, and I could see him coming from the other side of the room, and he went, "Gladstone's, I've got a bone to pick with you." And I just went, "Uh-oh, back out of here, back out, back out." And I just, I backed right out of the conversation. And then they stood there and they laughed. And I don't think they'd seen each other for years either. It was really beautiful. It was quite a special day.
He could have said, "This is all your fault."
Oh, I think it might have been something, some comment that John had made about sub-regions, or anyway, there was always a bone. And, you know, Tom was an incredibly intelligent, very eccentric man. And, you know, he had a beautiful brain. He was a historian, you know, he'd studied, well, I mean, he was a cardiologist, but he studied Latin and languages and history, and he was a fascinating character.
Yeah, amazing. Listen, you now work with fruit from four sites, including the original home vineyard, which was planted in 67,
that's
Adams
right.
Road, Carriedale, and Boogeydup. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Can you just tell us a bit about the sites and why they're different? Are some of them better suited to some varieties rather than others?
Oh, look, there's no question. And, you know, this is a really hot topic in Margaret River at the moment, actually. There's a huge amount of research going into the soil and climatic influences of the region. I think there's a couple of key points. The Margaret River runs almost straight through the middle of the region, heading west. It almost divides the region in half. And if you go and just around the Margaret River, it's kind of a slightly higher ground and it's really mean soil, but it's really good. And it's great for grapevines. I mean, it's not high yielding, but it's beautiful, you know, lean, gravelly soils. But what we find is our vineyard, where Tom planted and originally planted some, you know, Cabernet and Malbec, that is our Cabernet sweet spot. There's no question. It just has that extra bit of warmth, and we get that extra bit of ripeness, but it's also close enough to the coast where we get that sea breeze. So we get that moderating long ripening, but really mean soils with enough warmth to ripen Cabernet and get the tannins where they need to go. So that's our Cabernet sweet spot. But Boogeydup, which is just south of the Margaret River, it's actually one of the coolest spots in the Margaret River region. It gets this very cool airflow systems. It's got the highest rainfall and the coolest temperatures. And it's an absolute rockin' place for Chardonnay. Great acidity, beautiful, pithy phenolics, you know. It's a really great – I mean, that's where, you know, Lewin began with Chardonnay, Xanadu, Voyager, all down that way. And then you go up north where they're, you know, in Cabernet Town, Mosswood, Cullen, Woodlands, all those guys. So you've got these really beautiful sweet spots.
Yeah.
We've got another vineyard out at Carbonup, and it's slightly warmer, very reliable ripening, but definitely more fruity and more sort of plush fruit, but slightly lighter weight. So that's kind of our, you know, Phileas and Classic tiers. And Carradale is in transition at the moment. This is fascinating. It's right down south and it gets a lot of Southern Ocean influence. It's got a lot more cloud cover and slightly more humidity. And we just got rid of every other variety on the property and it's now 100% Chardonnay of lots of different clones for sparkling.
Yeah, fantastic. I want to ask you a bit about how your winemaking style has evolved over the years. I mean, I read something from you saying that it's hard, it's just as hard to let it be as it is to intervene. And I know that you like that word funk in your wines. Just tell us about how your winemaking style has changed over the years.
Oh, look, I mean, I think I've just got, you know, and going to Vass Felix was obviously the great stimulator because the fruit quality is so great. When you have beautiful fruit, you want it to be transparent. You want it to speak of where it's from and you want to see the difference from one plot to the next. And it's certainly, you know, learning at university and then, you know, all this technical bollocks that people keep coming at you. Well, honestly, when you leave university, the people who are throwing latest research at you are all the additive companies. And they, you know, throw out, you know, this is how you make your wine like this, this is how you make your wine like that. And it's like, why are we adding all this stuff so that we can all make the same wine? I have no interest in doing that. Our wine, Vass Felix wine, should look like Vass Felix. It should look like it's from Margaret River and it should look like it's from our vineyards. So I think getting a lot freer in not adding things, getting more and more comfortable with not adding what all the companies and all the researchers telling you that you need to add all these things to make great wine, not doing it and just allowing the fruit to express its true self. And that's been a really beautiful journey. And it takes risk, you know, it takes a bit of courage to do that because I've got the whole of Vass Felix brand at my fingertips and, you know, make or break it. I certainly didn't want to break it.
So no, and I think the funk thing is interesting. I mean, I remember judging wine in Australia in the 90s and they were obsessed with faults. You know, anything that was even remotely faulty in inverted commas was thrown out. But you quite like a little bit of funk. And I think Australia maybe as a whole is relaxed about those things, would you say?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, faults are faults and I still don't want faults, but I want complexity and I want secondary complexities coming from, you know, being a little bit freer in winemaking, you know, allowing some of the yeast lees to come through, the higher solids, the wild yeast characters, all those sort of things. You know, the wines that excite me most in life are the ones that have this little, ooh, what's that? It's not just fruit. There's something really special coming from individual producers. And you can very rarely put your finger on it, but people find a way, and it's a really fine line of how you manage it, but you get a little characteristic where it's a trademark of that estate. And that, to me, makes unique, high-level wines that are really, really special. So I feel like it's my journey to find the little fruit plots that give you that exceptional Grand Cru status, but it also has an extra level of what is that character? There's a little Vass Felix in there, and it's no one knows what it is. It's definitely not a fault. I like to think of it as almost like a sexy pheromone sort of character, you know? You're drawn to it.
So could we could call it Vass Felixness, I suppose, in a way, could we?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've got to find your feet. You know, my journey lately, in fact, I've been talking, you know, particularly with all this research, is that our generation of winemaking now, all of the winemakers in this region now, are the modern monks of Margaret River. We're the ones on the journey that are trying to decide what the Grand Cru plots, the Premier Cru plots and the Village type plots are of this region. And I think that's a really, really noble journey to be on. In fact, do you want to hear my monk quote?
I'm dying to hear your monk quote.
We work for the quality of great wine from the land and we live to learn from the land by treating the produce respectfully.
Ha. Did a monk say that?
No, that's Monk Wilcock who said that.
Oh, very good.
I know.
I thought you meant a Burgundian monk.
No. This is the Margaret River monk, the new Margaret River monk, the modern Margaret River monk, who's not a quiet monk and nor is she a celebrant. Let's not talk about that. Yeah.
No, exactly. Can't go there.
Celibate. Yeah.
Listen, you're best known for Chardonnays and Cabernets, although you make other stuff as well. But what do you like and dislike about both varieties? Do they require very different approaches? I mean, one's white, one's red, obviously, but in terms of the way you treat them and handle them?
Oh, look, they are very different. And I think, well, the one similarity, I think, in both of them, and in fact in Margaret River in general, is the art of restraint, because we have a lot of fruit power. Yeah. So I think, you know, the one common thing is about how to restrain them. How you do that is two totally different ways. And I think the thing for me with Cabernet is the, and I'm not sure whether it's, whether we're going down the right path or whether people are going down the wrong path with Cabernet, because we're very much, you know, we love that beautiful digestive quality of Cabernet, the, you know, the tannin structure, that beautiful space that you get in Cabernet. And I think it's one of those varieties that can deliver that beautiful, you know, juicy, cleansing, food-friendly wine. Yet it's been made too big for too long. And yeah, we're on a journey to sort of discover that digestive quality back in Cabernet without pushing it, letting it be a little bit more itself, letting it be a bit more restrained and a little bit more spacious, and while maintaining really good fine tannins. So that the art of doing that for me is really challenging. How long to leave it on skins. Every little plot behaves differently. The, you know, every different berry size, the proportion of tannin in every plot is different. And trying to get that little art right. So that does my head in. And I guess, you know, Chardonnay is, for me, Chardonnay is just trying to get that solids right and trying to get the perfect conditions for the wild yeast, because they are my key. You know, we use wild yeast with all of our Cabernets, but you don't smell and taste wild yeast in Cabernet, because Cabernet is way more powerful as a wine, as a perfume, you know. It's a much stronger proposition. Chardonnay is way more transparent. So it shows its wild yeast characters. So for me, it's trying to find that perfect comfort zone that those that are wild yeast like in a barrel, so that they give me the best of them.
Just explain what you mean by solids for people listening. Some people might not know what you mean there.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, well,
we're geeks.
Yeah. So when you press the Chardonnay off skins, you get quite a cloudy juice. Now you can settle that juice so that all the solids end up at the bottom of a tank, and then you take the clear juice away and put that into barrel. Now for me, I like to take all the cloudy stuff, not settle it. So you have the whole juice. I liken it to cloudy apple juice and clear apple juice. I don't know if they still have them in the supermarket. But
probably, you know, illegal now.
Yeah. But it used to be, you know, just like whole pressed apples that were cloudy and juicy. You have clarified, where it's crystal clear.
So, orange juice would be another comparison.
That's true. Yeah, orange juice versus clarified orange juice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of my favourite Virginia quotes, there are lots of them, but as you said, make the wine you love to drink. I just wonder, apart from your own wines, which you obviously drink, what do you enjoy drinking? Is it all Aussie wine, or do you find you look overseas a fair bit?
No, it's a really interesting thing being a West Australian. We tend to be so far from the other prolific wine regions of Australia that I would suggest we probably drink more international wines than we do from other parts of Australia. And I think it's also because of the style of wine that we make here is probably more in that sort of, you know, French, Italian kind of restraint, you know. Mm. So we tend to sort of drink a lot more of those wines. I mean, you know, in the Great Southern down here, you've got fantastic Rieslings, and we drink our beautiful Rieslings from down in the Great Southern, Franklin and Mount Barker. And that's certainly a great summer drink. I drink a lot of Chardonnay from all over the world, and that includes East Coast, you know, Tasmania, Victoria, Yarra, Mornington, New Zealand. There are some great Chardonnays coming out of New Zealand now. Certainly Burgundies we drink quite a few of. Very rarely drink American wines, though. No, not many Californians. Very hard to get here, funnily enough. Very expensive.
And quite pricey.
Yes, expensive. Very expensive. But from a red, from different varietal perspective, and this is where my, you know, Cabernet palate is all about restraint. I love Nerello Mascalese from Sicily. I love the, you know, Nebbiolos of Piedmont. You know, just that beautiful rustic red, I think, is so stunning with it really, really lovely acid line.
I mean, are there any grapes that you don't work with that you'd love to work with? I mean, Nebbiolo be one of them, or Nerello Mascalese?
Yeah.
Pinot Noir?
Look, I think that, you know, when I came out of uni, there were so many of my mates who were all Pinot obsessed, and I just went, let them have it. I drink a lot of Pinot, but I feel like there's enough people passionate and arguing about how to make great Pinot that I don't need to enter into that fight. Yeah, I am definitely in the more alternative. I'd love to, you know, challenge myself to make a great Nebbiolo or Nerello Mascalese. I think they would be, you know, beautiful wines to craft.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that climate change is affecting Margaret River? And if so, are people going to have to plant different varieties in the future?
Oh, look, we're not even considering different varieties at the moment, because over the last sort of 12 years, you know, we've had, in the last 3 years, we've had two of the coolest years in the last 12. So we've had a very, very consistent run of climate. So it's very hard to consider which way our climate is going to go. There's some reports that suggest that Margaret River may get cooler, because it's drawing more from the Southern Ocean and the cooler temperatures off the Southern Ocean. So, the jury's out. You can't go and change too much. And look, let's face it, we're really just finding our strength in Chardonnay and Cabernet, and we're going from strength to strength because we've learnt to specialise and we've become masters of two varieties rather than trying to be a jack of all trades.
So the wildfires that they had in Australia earlier this year didn't hit you guys?
No, not at all. No, not. We had a beautiful season. I know it's really terrible. It's hard to say things like that when so many had such a tough time. But we had a beautiful season. We did have low yields, and that was a product of cool springs. Spring's our most challenging time because we get some storms, occasionally a little bit of hail. But the stormy weathers in spring are the things that knock us around from a yield point of view. But, yeah, we are so far from the east coast of Australia.
It's almost like a different country, isn't it?
It is. It's a totally different climatic influence. You know, they're influenced by the Atlantic Ocean. We're influenced by the Indian Ocean. So it's a, you know, very different world.
Tell us about the difference between the ocean influences.
You look at the think about the Antarctica. This is how I always like to portray it from Margaret River. The Antarctica weather patterns, when you actually look at them on a map, how they come out of the Antarctica, they're always running in a clockwise direction from the south. So in that clockwise direction, we are getting all of our weather coming across that big ocean out there, you know, towards South Africa and Antarctica, not coming across the country. Mm. And you've got the Atlantic influence where you get a lot of those warm water streams, a lot warmer water streams coming across the top. So I think the, you know, El Niño, La Niña effects are far more prevalent across the east coast of Australia than they are across the west. A lot of the cyclonic activity comes across the Kimberleys and Northern Territory, but a lot of that sweeps across east. It gets pushed across east by the southwesterlies pushing us across. So it's touch wood, we've been extremely fortunate, but west coast climates are always different from east coast climates globally. You know, you look at West Coast USA versus East Coast USA, West Coast Africa, East Coast, you know, South America, same. Very, very different influences.
Very interesting. I mean, you've made some amazing wines, obviously, but fascinated, you said you haven't made your greatest wine yet, which is great. You're still ambitious to improve. How will you know when you've got there?
Oh, no, it'll be that sort of rock and roll moment. I'll die and then someone will say, This is the greatest wine ever made. Or it's, you know, the great artist. They always die before someone proclaims their art. So I'll never know. I'll never know. Hopefully I do it.
But they'll look back and say, God, that was amazing, that Cabernet she made or that Chardonnay she made.
Exactly.
And you won't even be alive to see it.
Correct. Correct. That's my feeling. Yep. I'm just going to keep dreaming that that's going to happen because it might not happen in my lifetime. I'll just pretend it's going to happen when I'm dead.
And do you think you're more likely to do it with Cabernet or Chardonnay?
Oh, look, Margaret River at the moment has just got so much great success in Chardonnay and it's just so consistent and wonderful. But I think Cabernet is yet to be discovered from a global point of view. I think there's too many other sort of shitty Cabernets out there in the world giving Cabernet a bad reputation that it's going to be a while before we you know, really discover how great Cabernet can be. I don't know. I don't know. Tough one.
I just wonder, I mean, you're a brilliant communicator. I just wonder how you communicate your vision to the people you work with, because it's very important, you've always said, to take them along with you, right?
Oh, look, it is my team are everything to me. If they don't believe what I believe, then we're going nowhere. So I spend a lot of time on the tasting bench with them, talking through philosophies, you know, why did that wine evolve and become the way it became and how we might change its little pathway next year and, you know, what worked, what didn't. So I spend a lot of time bringing people into the conversation on the tasting bench, and that's where we learn everything, you know. The wine tells you more of a story than any, you know, numbers or words could ever do. You need to smell and taste something and go, what's happening there? And then go looking into the pathway that it's been on and where it came from and the aspect and the conditions that year. It's such a beautiful journey. And it's, you know, I feel like, you know, these are my kids, you know. I never had children. My wine family are the young winemakers that I bring up with me and take on the journey with me to make, you know, make something really beautiful and really special.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously live in a place that's pretty close to paradise. We've talked about this. You've got the beach and you've got the countryside. I just wonder, are you missing the travelling? I mean, are you missing a bit of travelling or are you missing a lot of travelling?
You know, I forgot how long Margaret River winter was, that's for sure. You know, first sunny day and I'm like, woohoo, this is amazing. But look, I do love travelling because, you learn so much more about what people think about your wines. And I think it's what you get from people when you're traveling that helps you, I guess, re-energize yourself about your journey and make it feel more worthwhile. You know, it does affect people. And the more you can actually communicate with people and learn from them about how it does affect them, the more you can actually better yourself, I think.
Yeah. And how do you get away from wine? I mean, is wine totally your life, or the other things you like doing where, I don't know, roller skating or reading or playing a musical instrument or?
Yeah, I think it's going to the beach and gardening. I love my garden. I'm quite passionate about watching things grow. So gardening's probably my next best hobby, but I go to the beach anytime I can. The ocean, you've got to get to the ocean. The ocean makes you feel good.
Yeah, just the smell of that ocean is amazing. It's so wild, isn't it, as well?
You should have seen it this morning, though. It was literally like diving into glass aqua colour. It was crystal clear, not a ripple on the ocean. It was incredible. But, God, it's cold. Trust me, it is very, very cold.
to be in Margaret River right now. And Virginia, thank you so much for spending time to talk with me. It was great fun as ever. I knew you would be. See you soon.
So lovely to talk to you. Bye.
See you, man. Bye.
Fantastic to catch up with Virginia, and I do envy her living next to the beach. Next week on Cork Talk, my guests will be Marcelo Retamal from De Martino and Viñedos de Alcohuas in Chile. See you then. Thanks for listening to Cork Talk. If you want to read more reports, articles and tasting notes by me, go to my website, timatkin.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, @timatkin, and on Instagram, @timatkinmw. See you next week.